Next concert, the future in classical music.
Welcome to the podcast Abel Silauce, with huge energy usually and great ideas about the future of classical music. So if you think of the term future, what would that be for you in music?
Oh, wow. Well, firstly, thank you for having me. The future, I tend not to think a lot about the future. And I tend to think about a current inspiration, you know. I think evolving is somewhat up to us, but also not really up to us, you know, like what happens in the current present can be so amazing, creating a combination of influences for the future that we don't have control over. But certainly, I think the future will always be sharing influences. That doesn't stop. The future will always be understanding, you know, where we came from and what was tradition and what has dissolved from that tradition. You know, it's understanding those things that kind of inform your present time and what could be the future.
That's really beautifully put, and it hits hard on us mid-Europeans who have a very narrow view on origins and where we all coming from. And we can learn a lot from you and your musical idea, because whenever I listen to your recordings, I feel everything so connected in a good way, that everything's so coming from the same spirit. When you play Bach, it sounds like the universe is really in it, and also everybody on this earth is allowed and invited to share, not only the mid-European, this is the way to play and this is not. So what is your approach to the music rather than looking into the notes?
Well, I mean, you know, music is kind of like a wonderful mirror for society. It tells you what's going on at the time. It also highlights understanding of the world that comes from a very long time ago that is very similar to today as well. It seems like time doesn't matter in music. It's understanding what's around you. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, I think in that sense, that's music in that sense for me. Yeah.
It is almost like it's not you have come to the cello, but the cello has come to you, because whenever I hear you playing, it's like it's your musical personality that's doing something, and the cello is just coming there and an invited tool, but it's not the main instrument of this, because the wholeness of your musicianship is the music instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you wouldn't say to a poet, your instrument are your words, you know, it would just be simply the tools are the words, which is what the instrument is. You know, it's a tool to my context, to my culture, to where I'm from. And also, you know, understandably that the cello doesn't, you know, come from the African diaspora or the African perspective. But, you know, if you hand somebody a tool, a shovel or something, they'll do something completely different with it. And I think that's quite important to have these things in different hands as life goes by. The cello hasn't been much in Africa, but actually I feel like there's some scope of similarity between what it is and what other, you know, African parts are. So there's always a thread that binds these things together, even if it's a small one. It becomes something quite big after a while if you explore it.
Could we, although the story is so well known, but maybe you'd briefly like to introduce us to the world in which the cello came to you? So it was in Soweto, which is, well, in your youth, at least not before, but I'd say from the 90s and from the year 2000, it's become like a cultural center where a lot of possibilities were given to young people. So where would you enter that picture, and how did it go from there for you?
Well, okay, so the way I entered the picture of that landscape is through my brother. My brother was a bassoon player, fagot player. It's amazing inspiration for me throughout the years, but also somebody who took the initiative to do something different from our culture, from where we were, and he just wanted to try and to experience different parts of the world, you know, in that sense. And he gave that gift to me. And we went to a school, a music school in Soweto, where there were other kids, black kids, who were amazing learning string instruments. It was like an outreach program, so often we shared our instruments. Nobody had their own instruments and that kind of thing. But this is, you know, amazing because we didn't have the context of tradition. And I found that amazing because we had the freedom that we wanted to put on the instruments. And then we were also taught a little bit, you know, where all of these things came from. Started playing the Bach suites, started doing very different things, you know, and learning even the technical things on the cello from old masters and things like that. So this combination of these two worlds, you know, there were no rules against it, and that was very freeing and very beautiful.
What did you do from there? Because usually, if there are gifted young instrumentalists, they would hide in their rooms and start playing scales and learn the repertoire, whatever that may be. And then, until they are finally allowed out to the world, it seems like you did different. What did you do?
Well, I think that's, you know, that's African culture. So you learn things next to other people. There's a very much the philosophy of each one teach one. If you discover something, you have to pass it on to the next person. And we also never had the opportunity to have a room to ourselves, you know. We didn't have the privilege of one cello, one teacher to one child. It was always in groups, you know, things like that. And I think that was a really beautiful way to learn next to other people and to struggle next to other people trying to learn something, you know, and to be at the very beginning of basics next to other students, while also next to you are students who are a bit further, you know. And so the relationship between being really great at what you do was literally next to you. So your peers and the other students are what inspire you more than the teacher sometimes because of how much they improve of you know, of and they're right next to you. So that was amazing to have. And yeah, we our classrooms were full, you know, and had maybe two cellos and maybe, you know, six, seven kids to two cellos, and in the next class the same thing. So it was a bit like that, you know.
Is that, coming back to the future again, is that something you wish for young people basically all over the world? Not only, well, we have one initiative here in Germany that says each kid one instrument, but I feel that the idea of sharing the instrument as well means a lot to actually be able to listen and to feel what the other person is feeling who's playing the instrument as well. So is that something that's important for kids or for young people as well, to give them at least the opportunity to play? If they don't stay to it, it can be something else, but at least to experience music and from there start
Oh,
thinking.
100%. I think, you know, I think most people should be allowed the right to make music, even if they're not, quote unquote, meant to be musicians. You know, there's nothing such as that. You know, I just feel like the reason there's a profession for music is just because of, you know, of industry of the world. But in fact, you know, music hasn't always been a profession. It's always been a vocation, you know, things to pass on messages, things to put people together. It's not always been for maximum, you know, consuming of the most people. It's actually always been for certain reasons. So I certainly think everybody has the right to play music. Everybody has the right to sing. This is such a big deal for communities, and we need to combat things like loneliness, you know, in the world. That's what music is for. It would be crazy just to think music is for performance and people buy tickets and we play. It's not a profession. It's a social savior in that sense, you know. So everybody needs it, and I think all children should give it a go, you know. And I also think all children should teach each other, because that's a big deal. I think some of the most inspiring people are my friends, not the older people that are all the way up there.
When did the Bantu tradition add to your music? Because it's probably always been there, but there must have been one day or the other when you realized, okay, I have something to share. I can work it on the cello.
It was always there. I mean, like, as soon as we were given the instruments, like, because before we were singing, you know, we were singing hymns, African hymns, especially, you know, church-based things, but also cultural-based things. Because, again, like many parts of the world, religion and culture mix in so many different ways in South Africa. We have, you know, maybe 11 official languages, you know, which means different tribes, 11 different tribes across. And everybody has very different cultures and some similar things, but also this idea of God came, you know, back in the day with colonialism, but it became a big fabric of African culture and religion. And that realization mixed musics a lot. So we were already singing, like, since we were young, making up songs. And I think, as I said before, the minute you're given an instrument is like, oh, I have a memory of what music is. It wasn't like, here's the beginning of music through this instrument. You know, we have memory through our culture, through the drum, you know, through the voice, and everything else is a translation, you know. Like, even if you take language, you know, language is drums, you know, language is rhythm. And our lyrical voices can move on to the cello in translation. So everything just became translation rather than something that was new.
In your concerts, you show everybody that it is so easy to learn that language. Because whenever I listen to your recordings or see you live, I think, ah, yeah, it's all in the music. But we only dare to sing inside and you just open your mouth. That's basically the difference. So, when you're playing, you're at least by the end of the concerts, you're inviting people just to, yes, open their mouths.
I mean, there's so many different ways to present music, you know. Some ways are extremely reflective, and some ways are extremely active, you know. And I appreciate both. And we have both in our culture, you know, when there's a time, and this is sometimes based on children and elders, you know, there's a time where you have to let maybe the elder speak, even though you might, you know, object. But you have to give a chance for a philosophy to be presented to you rather than interrupted. And that takes a lot of resistance and a lot of maturity to do. So that's a different way of presenting something. And the other way is through heavy participation, where people are giving back as much of the energy that the artist is giving. And I celebrate both, you know, and I think it's both beautiful.
It obviously is very attractive for a lot of orchestras or groups to be part a little bit of your world and of your thinking because you make it so easy to join. And that is something that's indescribably wonderful. And so people are sort of conquering of who can invite you first. And the Deutsche Symphonieorchester, the DSO, invites you for a full package of your different faces, maybe let's call it like this. So, what are you showing here, and why is that a different chance than just coming for one Bach solo?
I mean, this is such a beautiful opportunity to celebrate all sides and such different parts of music. As I explained, this philosophy of how we present music or how we give music to society, and if the society gives it back, and how people receive it. So there's so many different ways. So we begin with a solo show, and that explores really the foundation of everything, my voice, deep throat singing, the use of external instruments and overtones, and the use of different types of playing on the cello that I feel are deeply African. But also the mix of going to those worlds and seeing and showing people at the most basic level how all things are connected in sound and in philosophy, how we can reach out to each society to show them how similar we can be, and also how different we can be and how celebrated that can be too. And then the next concerts are with the orchestra, with the Deutsche Symphony Orchestra, and that's going to be a premiere of a new cello concerto by a wonderful composer called Jesse Montgomery. And the piece is called These Righteous Paths. And it's basically an inspiration of from a mother, from a mother who was, again, comes from the black community, but a different type, a displaced community for a very long time. And the search for that and the understanding of society in that way, but also in the sense that the cello meets a very classical world, but with a very African story, which is such a very beautiful thing. So that's a new combination, and I'm an interpreter in this world, which is a very nice thing. Whereas the night before, I've been kind of the creator of all of the sounds, of all of the compositions, and the next day, I interpret a story of a certain culture that is black, that is American, but that also searches for its Africanness within a new landscape, which is very beautiful, I think. And then the last concert is my band called the Bantu Ensemble, so Abel Salatra and the Bantu Ensemble. And this is very powerful because it's now comprises of all of the worlds, of free improvisation in jazz, in classical, but also, we go all the way to Baroque music to cosmic sounds, and we have amazing musicians around, our pianist, who's a great Baroque musician, but also a great jazz musician. And our percussionist, who's a great free improviser, but he makes his own instruments that create sounds that we've never heard before. And we have an amazing bass player who's, he loves playing groove and keeps the band kind of moving along. So this is very exciting, and these are very different parts of me.
This being an interpreter for Jesse Montgomery's piece, just describe a little bit more. Have you met her or have you zoomed with her before, or did you just receive the part?
No, we met the first time in Trondheim in Norway, and we were starting to discuss, what are our identities. I think she wrote the piece very much with me in mind. We come from very different backgrounds, but actually, again, what is profound about where she comes from and where I come from and what's important. And it became clear that mothers are pretty important, and the history through them is quite important. And as soon as those conversations began, then the creative, began to open up, and she started to write. And then we met again in the US for her to see the things that I do usually on the cello, but without changing her style. It was that was quite important. And she's got this kind of beautiful rhapsodic and singing way of doing things, which fits very well on the cello. And then a little bit of additions from my voice, percussion, and things like that. And so These Righteous Paths, this piece, was born in this way. So through a very collaborative process, for sure.
I wanted to keep that out, but still, I'm so curious about the throat singing. I tried a lot, I failed a lot in doing so. What's the secret behind it? What are you doing, and where's the intention coming from?
Oh, I mean, it's hard to teach, again, I mean, for me, it starts with a little bit of cultural grounding, a way of singing in South Africa in the Eastern Cape called umngqokolo, and everybody sings with the throat, and it's for ceremony, it's for prayer. And so that's the first foundation for it. I mean, if the way to explain how to do it is through deep relaxation and not pressing. And it also requires you, because it speaks to an old, very old way of listening, which is overtone listening. You know, when we play four part and other, you know, harmonic music, you play out every note, and you really hear it. But whereas with throat singing or some other African instruments, the bass is one note, and you really have to tune your ears to hear more notes inside of the note. And so there's a whole world of overtones inside one note, and it's like a whole system of listening. Otherwise, you just hear the foundation note if you don't listen deeply enough. And this is the idea of throat singing. And we have maybe five, six notes, you know, inside, and that's the whole world. And that's very beautiful, yeah.
The world in this note, I can hear it, or at least who's interested in listening will be able to hear it. But there's also this mystery for me that sometimes it sounds extremely harsh, but it's not aggressive in that way. It's just extremely powerful and energetic. So how to not overdo?
I have no answer. I have no answer. I mean, it's about persevering. It's about, you know, relaxation, and find somebody who does it, you know, and spend time with them. Again, each one teach one, you know, sit next to somebody who does it and see if you can imbibe it and breathe it in, you know.
Thank you very much. In the future, I will do so because that is another part of the future in classical music. Thank you very much,
Thank
Abel
you.
Szilagyi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next concert, the future in classical music.